I want to welcome everyone to this week's episode of SalesCast. We've got some great questions from the field today, including a question on R&D and how the ISO process qualifies for R&D. We've also got a question about commercial properties that the owner is planning to sell, as well as questions about minimum qualifications and combining multiple properties. So in addition to that, we've got some great stories from the field that I know everyone's going to enjoy. And so we've got a great episode planned for today, and let's jump right in. Before we go into this week's main topic, I wanted to thank Vanil from California for sending in a story. And if you want to send in a story, you can go into the app, click on contact, and there's a place to record questions, there's a place to record stories, and that's all the questions and stories that you're hearing on this call. That's how they were submitted. So before we go any further, let's play that from Vanil.
Hi, this is Vanil from Long Beach, California. Just wanted to share a couple quick success stories with regards to cost segregation over the last few weeks. Had a manufacturing client that qualified for the cost segregation study, and working with Jeremy, Ted, and Bill, we were able to get the study completed in about 3 weeks and find the client over $100,000 in savings. And we had a second client this morning. We conducted a conference call. It was a smaller warehouse property. Turned out they did not qualify for the benefits, but we were able to do a call, share that information with their accountant, and their accountant's been pretty impressed with the whole process and our feasibility study. She's now referring us to another client that would be a good candidate for the study. So hope to keep that going, and thanks for all the help.
Thanks, Vanil, and congratulations on that client as well as all the other ones you've been submitting. You've been doing a great job. And again, one last time, if you want to submit a question, you want to submit a story, go into the app, click on contacts, and you'll see both of those options there. For this week's main topic, we want to take an excerpt from this week's SWAT training. And obviously, we can't play the whole hour and a half long training, but we wanted to take two parts out that we really thought was important to get out to everyone. And the first part of that is, what is cost seg? And I think everyone listening to this feels they have a good understanding of what cost seg is. But this is a great few-minute recap that we're hoping by listening to it just puts you in a better position to explain this, as you get opportunities. The second part to that is who qualifies and why. And again, even though you may feel you have a really good understanding of who qualifies, this is one of the biggest, selling features when you're talking to someone, is really explaining to them not just what you do, but why they qualify. This is a big part of what they want to understand. And so we're going to play both of those segments right now, and we hope you enjoy.
Cost seg is it's an engineering-based tax savings tool, and obviously we want to focus on the engineering-based aspect. Why? Because cost seg has many different flavors and many different interpretations. It is not a black or white issue. It is a interpretation of tax law and of case law that cost seg has come up with. So what we have here is an engineering-based tool that we're providing as opposed to some type of estimating tool that maybe a CPA or some other person would put together. Obviously, the important part of cost seg is that it's not a tax credit. A lot of people wrongly think it's a tax credit. It's not. It is an increase in something that is already done. And we talk about this frequently. With cost segregation, a client is already depreciating a building over a period of time, generally 39 years for commercial property. What we're doing is accelerating the depreciation on certain components. We are not necessarily changing anything. Now, I'm going to put an abbreviation on that and talk about that a little bit more later on about the 3115 form. But a lot of times when you're talking to clients, it's nice to be able to let them know that this is not, we're not coming up with some new product or new program, or we're not going to change how they do their taxes. What we're doing is increasing something that they're already taking advantage of, making it as efficient as possible according to the most current case law. Obviously, in a cost seg study, we are moving items from 39-year into shorter depreciation. Now, what that means, and again, we have – here's a little a slide. Again, some of this you've seen. A lot of it I've shared in prior weeks. But in different types of properties have different types of amount that we're allowed to capture, that we're able to capture. The more guts, the better. The more guts inside a building, the better. So as you're looking around and driving around and identifying possible opportunities, the best cost-seg opportunities are the ones with the most guts. Apartments, for example, are great because you think all of those rooms are sectioned off into smaller areas. So all of the electrical has to run in multiple walls. It's not just one big long run. So there's obviously a lot more electrical that has to go into it. If you have a big warehouse, big, say a manufacturing that's mostly warehouse, there's not a whole lot of guts that we're able to pull out. If there's no guts there, we're looking at the partition walls and the outlets and the flooring and the wall coverings, electrical, like I said, HVAC, all of those different components we're looking to pull out. But just think, the more guts, the better. If a building has a lot of guts, it's got a lot of glory, I guess, for cost sake. Our deliverable, and again, we're part of our deliverable is, like I talked last week and I believe the week before a little bit, we're providing an engineering report, 45 to 55 pages or so, that differs from the industry a little bit. Now, there are some competitive companies that have similar reports. That's just the reality of the situation. And what happens is, you know, we used to have a huge report, as I've mentioned, and we've pared it down based upon our client and our CPA requests. They've asked for a shorter report because they don't want this to be a big expense for them. And remember, when we're talking to our clients, we're consultants here. The important thing is that we're not putting our clients in a bad situation. So if I give a client a 10,000-page report and their CPA is going to charge them 500 hours worth of time to review that, that's not going to help our client. There's going to be a lot of cost there. So we are always listening and learning from our clients and from our CPAs and hopefully doing things in a way that helps them on every level.
So again, that's an excerpt from this week's SWAT training. We just thought that was great information to get out to everyone. I want to jump into a few stories and questions. The first one is an email that came in from Paul, and it says, if a company owns more than one property that the taxes combined equal $50,000 or more, do they qualify? For instance, I have a company that owns several gas stations and convenience stores, but the property tax for each location varies between $9,000 and $14,000 per year. Would they qualify if all the tax added up and equaled $50,000 or more? Well, the answer to this is that, you know, Paul, we always want to get in and do a review. And so don't let that hold you back. You know, I have a few gas stations that I did personally that were almost that exact scenario. There were several smaller locations with smaller bills, but because we were able to combine several of them, the tax benefit in first year alone was well over $100,000. And so the answer is yes, we want to speak with them, always do an introduction call. This leads right into a story that was emailed in from Bill. And Bill said, well, much was learned from a recent property tax review kickoff call for a couple of properties that did meet the threshold standards. In the call, we discovered that other smaller, below-threshold properties could be brought into the review, as well as given their close proximity to the above-threshold properties. So the review has been expanded to a portfolio of five additional properties. So good job, Bill. I appreciate you sharing this story. This is a great example of you know, sharing a story with us that, you know, everyone can benefit from, because they can take that story and literally in the same week we had someone else email in and ask that same question. So if you want to email in send in a question or send in a client testimonial or share a story, we've added a new feature in the app. All you do is open up the app and you go to contacts, and there's a section in there for share story, ask a question, and share client testimonial. So we're going to go to a few of those right now. The first one is from Craig.
Hi, this is Craig Hoffheimer from Cincinnati, Ohio. I was recently on a research and development call, and I think Leslie said that ISA expenses are not something that qualifies, and yet the literature and the presentations in the app specifically say that it is. So can you explain how that all works and what qualifies and what doesn't, and make sure that the apps and the verbiage when we talk to our clients are the same? Thanks very much.
That's a great question, Craig. And I've actually asked one of our senior project managers that specifically works with R&D clients to weigh in on this. So, Bob, what can you tell us about this?
Well, when it comes to the concept of ISO and ISA qualification, how it works and where a lot of the confusion comes in is that there are two steps to the ISO process. The first is paying your fee to use the stamp or paying to be ISO certified. And the second is getting ready to be ISO certified. So every year or two, they do what's called an ISO audit, where they come in to make sure you meet the standards and everything of that nature. The costs associated with getting ready for that audit or becoming compliant or making sure you're in compliance does qualify. But where the confusion comes in is a lot of people assume the fees they pay to ISO or ISA or any other organization, that those qualify, which they do not, because that's essentially just a fee to use, you know, the right to say, you know, I'm ISO certified or ISA certified or Six Sigma certified. And that's the part that's not. So the key to understand is it's the preparation of preparing for that audit and the labor expended and becoming ISO certified or maintaining your ISO status.
Our next question is from Dennis, and Jeremy, Alex, I'll let you take this one.
Hi, this is Dennis from Florida. My question is in regards to cost segregation. When an owner is on the fence of doing the service due to the fact that he's willing or looking at selling the property versus keeping it over a long-term period of time, what is our best approach on closing that deal and working with the customer at that point? Thank you.
It's actually a very good question, a very common question when people are getting ready to either list their property for sale or already have it listed, should they do a cost segregation study or not. It generally really provides an opportunity for us to be a true consultant in this role, because sometimes it still makes sense to do a cost seg and sometimes it doesn't. That's just the honest truth, and sometimes it doesn't make sense to do a cost seg on a property that's just about to be sold, and sometimes, like I said, there could be tax advantages of taking advantage of the cost segregation prior to the sale. So what you want to do, just like with any client, is get them signed up, let them know that we're going to be doing some consulting for them. And if it doesn't make sense, we're going to let them know, and we're going to work with their CPA to identify if this makes sense or not. If not, we're going to tell them. And if so, then we're going to, of course, do the study and get them the tax savings from that study. So thank you for the question. Keep them coming. Thanks, Dennis.
All right, our last question came actually from our SWAT training this week, and it had to do with what are the qualifications, of a bank? Are banks a good candidate? Is this something we should be targeting? So, Jeremy, I'll let you answer this one.
We've done some banks. Now, banks are a little bit different type of animal because of a lot of the regulations they're under, but we have done a lot of banks, actually. I wouldn't say they're near the top of our list, but we've done many banks. Again, they need to basically be privately owned and in need of, obviously, the accelerated depreciation. But there are things with the vaults, there's a lot of electrical, and it really depends. It just depends on the type of bank. There are certain banks that are very elaborate, and there are certain that are just a big square with some chairs in the middle. And again, the more guts, the more we have to go after.
Well, that's it for this week's episode of SalesCast. And again, if you've got a question, you've got a success story, you've got a client testimonial, go to the app, click on contact, and you'll see those options there. And be sure to tune in again next week.